we present the News Quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello and welcome again to the News Quiz. We start with a sign seen on Ward Street, Guildford, read by Peter Donaldson.
Due to roadworks, these toilets are not operational. Please use the pavement on the other side.
And thanks to Celia Woodward for spotting that. Let's meet the teams now. Please welcome first, on my right, Francis Ween and Mark Steele. Opposite them, on my left, John Sargent and Rebecca Front. Francis, your first question. Why has America's favourite economic vehicle turned out to be a fraud Fiesta?
Even I know this. It's something called WorldCom. I'm slightly embarrassed to admit I'd never heard of it. It turns out to have been the biggest company in the history of the planet. But it was run by a chappie who's been profiled everywhere. He was a rancher, a former cattle rancher, who came up to work every day in jeans and cowboy boots and Stetsons and stuff. I mean, how he could have made it more obvious that this was a cowboy operation, I don't know. Short of riding his horse to work every day and lassoing the typing pool, I don't know. But anyway, nobody guessed the thing. Nobody suspected until suddenly they discovered, with no thanks to Anderson, the accountants, who had not discovered this, despite many months of auditing, that there was this $4 billion hole in the accounts. I mean, they'd basically been claiming their running expenses as if they were capital investment, which made it look as if they were making billions of pounds profits instead of losses, as was the case. And George Bush, who was also photographed wearing a Stetson this week, with perfect timing, says he's very upset and affronted by this, you know, that a fellow cowboy has let the side down slightly, as they do so often. But there we are. I'm sure it's just a blip, as Nigel Lawson used to say, of every little crisis, the fact that two of the biggest companies in America both turn out to be massive frauds. And, well, the solution to it is less regulation, as the business organisations always tell us. If only they weren't hampered by all this awful red tape that forces them to file accounts every so often, then none of this would ever come out.
What they do, apparently, is when they go out to lunch, they put it down as capital investment, as you say, Francis, which I've tried that, but to get it up to £2 billion worth... I mean, you know, even these very fancy restaurants that Rebecca goes to... £2 billion is still... That's quite a lunch, isn't it?
These are said to be the second most unreliable accounts produced this week, right up there behind Ken Livingstone's What I Did at That Party. 2 points for Francis. Mark, who started some educational argy-bargy this week?
Ah, now, this was Estelle Morris, the peculiar-looking woman who's runs the education of the nation. Now, what did she say? She said something about comprehensive schools that was...
She said that sometimes she went to visit schools that she wouldn't touch with a barge pole.
Oh, yes,
were she still a teacher, which, thank goodness, she's not. She's only in charge of the education system instead. But it was a great slight to all these schools. She didn't name them, but wouldn't touch... But I don't know what it means, anyway, when she says, what are these barge poles? Why does this phrase...
Particularly with schools, it doesn't make any sense at all, as a saying, is it? I mean, you don't...
I've yet to see anyone with a barge pole, either touching or not touching.
That's not the point of a school, is it? If you say, I'd send my children there, but I'm not going to touch it with a barge pole. Of course you're not going to touch it with a barge pole. Do you get that when you drop your kids off in the morning? There's loads of people with huge barge poles. There are, never mind Estelle Morris, I've done it, boof.
It's like the Queen saying, you know, there are some parts of this kingdom I really could do without.
There just seems to be a new move afoot at the moment, that politicians have started telling the truth, which, you know, makes you feel uneasy. There was Blunkett last week saying talking to journalists is like living in a madhouse or whatever he said. And then Blair came back from Seville and, you know, there are all these sort of flunkies around him saying, oh, it went awfully well. And Blair just said, no, God, it was a disaster. I was awful out there. I just didn't get anywhere. And then there's Estelle Morris saying, you know, half the schools in Britain I wouldn't touch with a barge pole. Alistair Campbell's behind this. Definitely, truth is the new spin. I'm absolutely...
The Education Secretary, Estelle Morris, provoked uproar when she claimed there were some comprehensive schools she wouldn't touch with a barge pole. Now she finds she's up a creek without one. She used to be a PE teacher, which is presumably why, following criticism of her comments, she threatened to send the whole country to work in their knickers.
Pole vaulting. That would explain the barge pole, then. Don't you use a long pole when you pole vault?
Not a barge. Not a barge pole. That's why the English never win any medals.
If resources
you have
are
to
low
say,
in
the
a
British
rundown
athlete
area.
Competitors using a barge pole.
Rebecca, who wouldn't roll over when Bush came to shove?
Well, it could be Arafat or it could be Blair. Bush is gradually, systematically getting rid of all the world leaders that he doesn't like. And I think you have to try and look at this, if you can, from the cowboy's point of view, because some of these people that he's dealing with may not have been elected in the unimpeachable manner that he was. So, you know, obviously he's a bit uneasy dealing with some of these people, and he just understandably wants to kind of shove them out of the way. Anyway, Blair has said no. The mouse that roared. Blair has actually disagreed. So I think we can expect some kind of covert CIA operation on Downing Street in the next fortnight.
Should we really be trusting Bush at all to say anything on the Middle East, given that one of his first statements after September the 11th was, we must get tough with the suicide bombers? Which suggests to me that there's one or two fundamental aspects of suicide bombing he hasn't quite grasped.
Britain, in a rare breach with Washington, aligned itself with the rest of Europe, causing George W. dismay and Lady Thatcher to turn in her grave. John, who is in trouble for bringing the party into disrepute?
Oh, yes, that party. Ah, yes, I get it now. Ken Livingstone. That's it, who's obviously completely innocent. You go to a party, 3 glasses of wine, you then sleep for a few hours, perfectly normal, wake up at 1 o'clock, you then have an absolutely straightforward discussion with someone about the fact that your partner has got a child on the way that may suffer health problems because she's smoking. So all that's perfectly right. Then the person you're talking to does a backward somersault and knocks himself unconscious. I thought it was perfectly straightforward.
The wall was only 10 foot high. It wasn't 15 foot high, and that makes a huge difference when you're landing on concrete.
Ken actually went to measure the wall, he said, as if it made the slightest difference. It's become the grassy knoll of Ken Livingstone. He's convinced that there was a lurking figure there in the upstairs window who was up to something and pushed this chap off.
Did you notice he mentioned that he went to measure the wall on the tube? He went on the tube. That was very important.
Lest you think
point.
He has a chauffeur.
Ken Livingstone denies that the scandal will affect his chances of being re-elected as mayor, though he has admitted he's got a tough fight on his hands since Lennox Lewis is standing as an independent. So we start round two with an item heard on the Today programme reporting on the US Masters Golf.
The Swede Jan Parnevik may feel a little disappointed. He didn't feel much like breakfast this morning after having had 3 bogeys. I'm sure if you'd offered him a 69 this morning, he'd have taken it.
Thanks to Tony Pristovec and Rayanne Cook for that double whammy. Francis, who's had enough of French camp?
David Blunkett?
Yes.
Well, there we are. There's your answer. 2 points.
It is. Good.
It's David Blunkett who wants the Sandgaps camp closed down because he doesn't want all these bloody foreigners coming over to London taking his job in the way that Gordon Brown and Robin Cook and the rest of them have. He wants the asylum seekers' camp closed down because it's too near the duty-free's at Calais. Is that right?
Well, these sort of papers like the Daily Mail, they love this story because it allows them to be racist about 2 countries in one sentence, going, bloody frogs keep sending us their bleeding Bosnians.
There's a strange part of this story, though. It's that we are going to pay the French £4 million for this fence around the rail depot. If you think of it, it's a very strange principle. You pay another country for stopping people leaving that country. Well, I don't remember being charged for the Berlin Wall.
It's all based on the idea that, oh, asylum seekers coming over here is all just going to make life harder and they're all sort of just a drain on resources. Seems to me to be looking at it the wrong way around, because it starts from the assumption that Britain is full and can only take like an exact number of people, as if it's a nightclub. And we need a couple of bouncers at Dover going, hang on, wait, no. Stay there, hang on, all right, I've heard there's been 2 cremations in Nottingham. 2 can come. You stay there. But it's such an absurd idea as well that people think, oh, the thing with these asylum seekers, I mean, these people that have climbed in the back of a lorry under a box of tomatoes and gone 2,000 miles and then they've clawed their way across the channel on a dinghy, they're coming here because they're basically lazy and want to just fly around on social security all day.
Home Secretary David Blunkett held key talks with his French counterpart to put an end, finally, to an issue that has poisoned relations between our two countries for years. So, no more repeats of allo, allo on BBC One, then. Mark, your real question, where have some of the seeds fallen on stony ground? Oh, come on, seeds!
Oh, yes, those sorts. God, you and your cryptic ways. This will be Wimbledon.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, as a dedicated sports follower, I manage to miss Wimbledon usually, but yes, I think some of the... Well, Agassiz was one of the top seeds and he was beaten, and Sampras indeed was beaten and then complained because he was on the wrong court. He's got a little bit of English in him there, hasn't he? I was beaten because I was on the wrong court. It was... My feng shui person said court seven it had to be for me. Yeah, so some of the top seeds, but not Tim Henman, and just like...
Unless you're listening to the repeat, of course.
But just to me, the attitude's very similar to it was with the football. It's like, oh, well, we've beaten Denmark, now it's pretty much in the bag. I mean, it's only... There's only some Brazil or one of those silly little countries. Magus is out, Henman might as well go and collect the trophy now. He's only got to meet the number one seed and the number two seed and people who have beaten him 6-0 in every match they've played since 1924. And that's it, he's won.
I'm having trouble adapting to Wimbledon after the World Cup. I cheer when the ball goes into the net. I did enjoy seeing Pete Sampras, though, the tennis machine, crank to a halt. That was great, wasn't it? Did you see that amazing photograph of the note that his wife sent him, which said, and he read it in the middle of the game that he then lost, and it said, "My husband, 7 times Wimbledon champion, Pete." That was the first bit. That was the bit that we got. The second bit, which we didn't get, said, "It's your turn to do the shopping."
In the first week of Wimbledon, top talented players such as Pete Sampras and Andre Agassi and Anna Kournikova have all been knocked out. This week, John McEnroe's ex-wife, Tatum O'Neill, alleged that he took drugs to enhance his tennis playing. McEnroe denied this, but has admitted to playing very well on grass. After being questioned about his ex-wife's allegations that he took steroids, McEnroe went through the roof. John, why are paltry living conditions on the government's agenda?
Oh, yeah, this is good news for battery hens. In 5 years' time, they're going to be given their freedom. Now, it is quite a long time ahead. Anyway, other victim groups, like Labour backbench MPs, have said, why can't they be given their freedom? But I think it's a very good plan. I think the only problem will be is if they release them on the same day.
Maybe they should let them out just maybe 3 at a time, as long as they explode all their weapons underground.
But the Germans have banned them altogether, even the new cages, because there are these new groovy cages, which are about 3 inches wider, these enhanced cages, which are meant to be much friendlier and comfier, and they've got ensuite loo, apart from that, it's called the floor. And the Germans have banned even those. So we're now going to be flooded with cheap American eggs, that's the threat, if we do that.
Right. It's the size, though. That's why they're the size of an A4 sheet of paper, apparently. That's helpful, isn't it?
The cage?
Yeah, if you want to imagine what it's like to be a battery hen, you know, you've got a piece of A4 paper like this, you can sort of get the whole idea, can't you?
Yes, this doesn't make great radio, John.
They're like us, really, aren't they? We all sort of sit in this strange sort of cage-like structure, feeding these little puppets from Simon, and we've got to try and do something with them. Another 5 years to go.
The government's considering banning battery chickens just as soon as the new eco-friendly clockwork chickens enter production. There's been mounting criticism about persistent imprisonment of dumb animals in confined condition, but still Channel 4 persists with Big Brother. We start round three with an item from a local church news sheet.
The sermon for this morning, Jesus Walks on Water. The sermon for tonight, Searching for Jesus.
Thanks, Hannah Dalgleish, for that. Francis, why might violent offenders be trading in their bother boots for shopping at boots?
This isn't
that research on the eating habits of our defenders, was it?
Oh.
Well, it was... There's a campaign called Natural Justice, run by the nice old Bishop of Birmingham, Hugh Montefiore, and they've commissioned some research which found that young violent offenders... There's a correlation between their violence and their offensiveness and the fact that they all eat junk food all day long. And when a sample of these young chaps were fed instead on pine nuts and tofu and lentils, they suddenly became very amiable, sort of spaced-out hippies, and they wanted to listen to whale music instead of beating up grannies. And it turns out that junk food makes you very violent and unpleasant. And if only everyone lived on a nice, wholesome, vitamin-packed vegetarian diet like Adolf Hitler, they wouldn't go around doing any harm to anyone.
I took a slightly different conclusion from that research. I think vegetables are to blame. I think it should be tough on crime, tough on vegetables. And if you sort of take that thought through and you imagine police interrogations in the future, it'll go something like this. I see, and what did you have with the roast beef and Yorkshire pudding? Just as I thought, broccoli. And, of course, in these more superior courts, in the Strand, in the Court of Appeal, it'll be, yes, my lad, as you suspected, cassoulet. There'll be some bright sort of lawyer type who'll then say, but what about Jerusalem artichokes? The answer will come back, they will be taken down and used in evidence. So I think we can, once we're on to this vegetable thing, it does change everything, doesn't it? It'd be absolutely wonderful if we can just repeat that particular scientific test.
There probably is something in it, but just because the people who eat all that sort of tofu stuff have just got no energy because there's no good, you might as well say, oh, well, we fed these potential criminals on nothing for 8 months. And at the end of it, they were quite calm. I don't mind people being vegetarians, that's fine, but I just think it's a bit... It's when it's forced on you. If you are eating bacon or something, those are the ones that say, well, I don't know how you could eat that. That used to be a pig. And I just think, yeah, well, it ain't now, though, is it? If I was captured by cannibals, I'd be even more pissed off if I thought that after they cooked me, they'd just go, I don't know how you couldn't throw me on a skin.
A study carried out at Aylesbury Young Offenders Institute found that a vitamin supplement drastically reduced violent behaviour in prisoners. Researchers said the findings could work on other antisocial elements too, such as John Prescott or the Mayor of London. Mark, which mountainous eyesore will we soon tire of?
Ah, oh, yes, mountains of... Yes, there's various... As there used to be sort of apple mountains and things like this, EC things, now there's a car tyre mountain. And a fridge mountain as well, I think there was. Various people will try to scale up soon and go up the south face of all these fridges and things like that. Is that the answer?
Yes.
It's because you're not allowed to put them in landfill sites anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so instead you just go and dump them in fields and in people's gardens and things.
It's quite an art to make a mountain out of a fridge, though. A fridge is, isn't it? That must be quite carefully placed. I mean, is this sort of, you know, much more difficult than cards? These people should be given the respect they deserve.
I think it's a figurative mountain, isn't it?
Oh, right. Well, so it's not an actual mountain, then.
If it was big enough, you could ski down it if you smoothed the edges of it.
This week, the Environmental Agency also warned about pending TV mountains. These are mainly due to the nation collectively throwing its sets out of the window after England's performance against Brazil. 2 points to Mark. Rebecca, who was responsible for a mammoth carve-up?
Oh, yes, wasn't the world's first abattoir discovered this week in somewhere very unlikely?
Thetford,
there you are. You can't get much more unlikely than Thetford for an abattoir.
Or Norfolk, which is where it was discovered. Yeah. Equally unlikely.
Thetford is in Norfolk. Wake up.
That's where Tom Paine was brought up.
Yeah. Not Deptford.
Thetford in Norfolk.
Thetford. Oh, Thetford! I thought you said Deptford.
Poor devil, he's just getting just over the hill a bit, yeah.
Neanderthal man probably had his first abattoir in Thetford.
But then, there's always a then, isn't there, with these scientific stories, the scientists say maybe the woolly mammoths just got stuck in the mud.
buried flat in Norfolk.
I don't know, given the reputation literary of quotation, Norfolk down the ages, it might just as well have been a brothel, for all anyone knows. I mean, sheep now, mammoths then. They had lions in Norfolk in those days, and tigers.
Yeah, but Neanderthals, to make more Neanderthals, had to sort of, didn't they have to get together with each other, though, didn't they, Francis? I mean, I think the idea that they're getting together with a woolly mammoth, so I don't...
Norfolk lions must be the calmest lions in the world, mustn't they? You don't want to go chasing after no wild beast. Calm you down, lion. Getting all het up and chasing after zebras. Sit down in the sun there. That's what I'd do if I were you. That's why the Neanderthals died out. They all come from Norfolk. They're all going, oh, we don't want to go down Ipswich too far.
Archaeologists have discovered evidence of an Ice Age butcher shop in Retford.
Now I've got Retford. We can't have
cover
Thetford,
all bases.
But now Retford.
Stetchford, Dartford, there's loads to go, yeah.
Lidford Gorge.
Catford it was.
Archaeologists have discovered evidence of an Ice Age butcher shop in Norfolk where a Neanderthal man carved steaks from woolly mammoths. Other remains discovered included those of a woolly rhinoceros, a beast exactly like a normal rhinoceros, except it votes liberal. During the Ice Age, tribes of Neanderthals roamed across much of East Anglia, whereas today they're pretty much confined to Lowestoft. 2 points there before we start the final round. Here's an item from the TV listings in The Guardian.
BBC One, 8 o'clock. UK's worst rail operators. Nick Knowles and Rhianna Scipio travel on some of the country's worst trains. Postponed from the 25th of April.
But thanks to Ian Keith for that. Mark, how can a cup of coffee stop you feeling sluggish?
Someone or other has apparently discovered that you can kill slugs with coffee. I think that's the idea, isn't it?
Well, you frighten them off, don't you? They don't like it.
Oh, right, right. So it's a humane thing. But they'll start, slugs will get into it and they'll start doing decaffeinated.
It's quite sinister, isn't it? Nobody knows why. It's the caffeine that kills them, that kills the slugs.
They'd probably be zipping about everywhere, wouldn't they? Slugs are probably not dead at all. They're just about 100 miles away. Just a huge slime like... diagonally going across the country, there'll be.
Not much scope for Starbucks to expand into the slug kingdom, I don't think. But
think of us in these coffee places, you go in there and you want a coffee and they give you all these possibilities, cappuccino, cafe americano, cafe latte, and you wonder why these slugs die. Well, they die like the rest of us, of indecision.
American scientists claim that a quick dose of caffeine will soon remove slugs and snails from your garden, mainly because they'll all be starting up a torrid affair with next-door slugs after popping over for some Nescafe. Many gardeners prefer to use beer. It may not work on slimy pests, but after the first 8 pints, you don't really care. John, why does making a profit in a charity shop come in cycles?
Yes, this is a weird story, wasn't it? It's that a 26-year-old goes into a charity shop in Edinburgh with her bicycle, which is worth about 1,200 quid, and which she's cycled halfway around the world. She then decides to try some clothes on at the charity shop, and they sell the bike for 10 quid. She's absolutely wild. She says, I feel as if I've been hit in the stomach. I fell on the floor, writhing. So there's this 26-year-old. The charity shop now don't know what to do. They've gone to the insurance company. They've gone everywhere to try and get the money back. But she doesn't want that because she doesn't want the bike. She now wants, wait for it, her memories of her trip around the world.
But the thing is,
isn't that sad? And how can they be got back? Money can't repair that, can it, Rebecca?
The thing is, she's a circus performer by trade, so she really only needs to get one wheel back. Or a hooter, she could be a clown.
But also it turns out that she left it in the window and went shopping at Tesco's while it was in the window, so no wonder they sold it.
She did.
She's on the radio.
Gets more and more complicated. Once you buy at Tesco, she came back and they probably sold that stuff too.
No, it is her own fault. It's like saying, I went down to Tesco's and I took £3 of oranges and I put them on the orange stall and I came back 4 days later, they'd sold them. And there were so many memories in those oranges.
Yes, Emily Harris found to her horror that the £700 Centurion bike she had taken into a British Heart Foundation charity shop while trying on clothes had been sold by staff for £10. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Francis.
This is from the Camden New Journal. It's about a vast property development in Camden, which includes a little stop, you know, a few flats for poor people as part of the deal. It says, the town hall has attempted to diffuse growing anger over the Swiss cottage development by rushing out a calming letter. The letter assures councillors the development will bring numerous benefits to the borough. It estimates that putting families still waiting to be housed by the council into the 41 flats will save £340,000 a year. It adds that all the flats are designed to a very high standard and will have windows.
Mark.
This is from Mr. Alan Stone in Brighton. The 72-year-old artist helped catch a knife-wielding burglar by drawing his picture, but the accused then pleaded not guilty to aggravated burglary, claiming that he was shoplifting at the time.
Rebecca.
After a series of complaints from the public, Buckingham Palace has sent a warning letter to Anne Summers, the retail chain that has 60 high street stores, and we all know what it is they sell. For the past month, the stores have been marking the Jubilee by displaying a poster of the Queen opening Parliament, but in her hands she holds not her speech, but the new Anne Summers Wild Guide to Sex. Above her head is a thought bubble reading, "For one must get one." That's not the black rod I was referring to.
John.
Mine's from the West Sussex Gazette. It's called Dead Tree. That's the headline. Cellnet has permission to build a mobile phone mast that is disguised as a dead tree. It is claimed that it will blend in with the three other dead trees in Rapper Lane Book.
Thank you all. Now let's look at the final score. Francis and Mark have 16 points, but thanks to my unique tie-break system, Rebecca and John have 17.
Hooray.
And before we leave you, here's an item...
Simon, you weren't referee in the Spain-South Korea match, were
you? No, I haven't disallowed 5 goals yet. Before we leave you, here's an item from the Daily Telegraph.
Britain's nude bulls team has won a sponsorship deal from Persil to pay for kit for the Sports Naturist World Cup. The 10 competing couples are allowed to wear socks and trainers to protect their feet from the gravel, and they'll use the sponsored towels to wipe their bulls.
And with that, goodbye!
Taking part in the news quiz were Mark Steele, Francis Wheen, John Sargent and Rebecca Frump. The chairman was Simon Hoggart and the news was read by me, Peter Donaldson. The chairman's script was written by Paul McKenzie, Simon Littlefield and George Poles, and the producer was Lucy Armitage.